What's going on, guys? Welcome into today's show. I've got Gary Lipsky, the founder of Break of Day Capital. He is a multifamily real estate investor and fund manager with over 3,000 units under management, $230 million in assets that him and his company own and work with in order to provide investors opportunities in the multifamily space. He has also been a lifelong entrepreneur. Before getting into real estate, he sold a after-school program for a very successful exit and then started transitioning more into commercial real estate and really talks about his journey and the timeline and the struggles and the challenges that went into building this, what is now a very successful juggernaut of a multifamily real estate investment platform. And for somebody that is, you know, looking to invest in any facet of real estate, to build wealth in any space or asset class in the real estate industry, Gary really shared some great stuff in terms of how he chose his asset class, where he finds those deals, how he underwrites these opportunities, how he analyzes which ones align with what they're looking to buy versus what they pass on. He talks about a lot of the hardship that people experience when going into investing in real estate, how to mitigate those risks, how to overcome a lot of those challenges, and overall, just some great insights on how they are navigating what is going on in the current market and economic cycle, what he sees long-term, short-term, all kinds of great stuff that anybody who's looking to build wealth in real estate investing, whether it's passive and investing in other people's deals as a limited partner or as an active operator and somebody who wants to be building a business or an investment portfolio similar to Gary's, whether it is in commercial, you know, multifamily or any other asset class, some great nuggets and some breadcrumbs of success that you can use to model going forward in your journey. So we'll have all the links and all the resources in the show notes at millionairemindcast.com on Gary's episode. And without further ado, let's dig into today's episode with Gary Lipsky.
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's show sponsor.
Are you struggling to close deals? Cold outreach can be a slow and brutal process. And in many scenarios, it's just wasting the time of both the buyer and the seller, especially when business owners who are trying to find qualified buyers are using inaccurate and outdated data. But it doesn't have to be this way. With LinkedIn Sales Navigator, your organization can overcome these challenges by leveraging this amazing technology and platform that translates comprehensive, high-quality buyer data into real-time insights and sales. These deeper insights empower sales reps and teams to adopt the habits of top performers, which leads to much better outcomes like building a bigger pipeline with real customers, leading to higher win rates and conversions, and of course, larger deals and paydays all around. We call this deep sales, and LinkedIn has built the first deep sales platform with the next generation of LinkedIn Sales Navigator. Right now, our Millionaire Mindcast family has an amazing opportunity to try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/mindcast. That's linkedin.com/mindcast for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/mindcast and get started. Welcome into the show, Gary Lipsky.
Have me.
How is everything going in the world of multifamily and affordable housing real estate?
It's interesting times. You've got some operators having capital calls, some operators giving deals back. You know, I guess in the big, big picture, it's still a small piece of it and not, you know, the sky is falling, but certainly people are feeling the heat with the interest rates going higher longer than anyone could have predicted, and costs rising, rents not as high as they used to be going. So you've got all these different things going on. You've got a lot of debt coming due, loans expiring, cap rates expiring. So it's very interesting times, and it's not as easy these days.
Yeah, it's funny. We were having a discussion in one of our mastermind groups of, It's easy to look good when the market props you up and, you know, kind of hide some of the weaknesses that now, when the market is not so good, are being exposed for a lot of people. I know that you guys are very sound operators. You guys are of the mindset that it's better to do no deal than a bad deal. Talk a little bit more about how things have shifted for you guys, going from doing 4 deals when the market was rocking and rolling to now doing just 1 deal over the last, you know, 16, 18 months, and how important it is sometimes to sit on the sidelines, or how are you guys, you know, assessing when it's time to get in and when it's time to sit patient?
Absolutely. Yeah. In 2022, we did about $132 million in purchasing 4 deals, and only did 1 deal. We got it done at the end of December. We put offers on deals. There's just not a lot of deal flow. To give you a big picture, in 2022, there was 28 deals that were 100 units or more that sold in Tucson, and only 3 deals of 100 units or more that sold in Tucson last year, which is, you know, what a huge, huge drop off. Certainly look, writing offers on off-market deals or deals that come on the market and are, you know, we're off 10, 15, 20% at times. The numbers that some of the sellers are asking for, you know, you're just like that, you know, it's, you're not getting the, you know, those cap rates anymore. You're not, it's a lot lower leverage. You've got to raise more money, and raising money is really hard. To close on our last deal, I mean, it took us about 5 months in escrow, which is long to be able to close on that deal. That was really, really hard. And, you know, a couple of weeks go by and we're just scratching our heads, and we know sentiment was tough, but man, we're not making a dent in the raise, you know? And, it was really, really frustrating. But we got there and we feel really good about the deal. But yeah, there wasn't many deals to go after. So we're just, even now, we're just looking at the few deals that come across and making offers where we stand. I had a broker say on a deal he showed me off market, he was looking for about high 17. I'm like, I'm at 16. So if your seller wants to come down, great. If not, then you know where I am, and I'll keep looking.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like the market is recalibrating a little bit right now, as Jerome Powell, you know, spoke at the FOMC today and said that they're going to hold rates where they're at. We were actually having this discussion on another podcast today, which was, it'd be very interesting if the Fed just said that they're not going to lower rates at all this year, and to see how the market would respond to that, being that so many people, it feels like, are kind of in this stalemate of, I want this price, or I'm going to hold out for this to fall in line, expecting the Fed to drop rates, you know, at least a couple cuts this year. They're estimating up to, you know, 75 basis points at a minimum. But it would be very interesting to see how the market might respond if they just said, hey, we're going to leave rates where they're at, and how that might really kind of reignite and or reengage some people from getting in the market, or maybe having more, you know, opportunistic discussions. How do you navigate, you know, getting the investment opportunities and return thresholds and goals that you have, you know, in a market like this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we still, you know, underwrite to our criteria, which our criteria is stiffer now because you're going to have a higher reversion cap. You're going to have a higher cap rate going in. The going in cap rate is not our end all be all. It's like, where can we take the deal? But certainly we're not underwriting it to in our markets, maybe a 4.5, 4.75 exit. We've got to have a reversion cap that's 5, 5.5, 6, depending upon what classes it is. What's the vintage? So there's other factors in there. So it's hard to make it work. And if Powell says we're not raising rates, then yeah, people are going to have to trade. They've been waiting and waiting. And certainly I'm waiting to sell some deals at the right point. But I certainly I don't want to sell at a time where I'm not going to maximize the return. So waiting for interest rates to come down, more money to flood into the market. And so maybe that will be maybe a year from now, year and a half from now. But each time they wait, it pushes everything back, you know?
Yeah, it's an interesting time right now for investors, and obviously navigating alongside the Fed is you know, part of, you know, figuring out and picking your spots and maybe, you know, setting your strategy going forward. Talk to me about your journey before you got into, you know, the fund space. You guys obviously have amassed, you know, significant amount of, you know, assets and cash flow and wealth with, you know, 3,000 plus units. You know, playing in the multifamily and the affordable housing space. I think you mentioned you guys have $230 million in assets under management right now, which obviously is a lot of dollars, a lot of operating capacity, and also a lot of great upside and, you know, wealth to be curated from that. That started somewhere. So where did this journey begin for you as a real estate investor, and what led you on this path?
Yeah, you know, I've been an entrepreneur since I've been in high school. And so I didn't buy my first property, though, or start investing in real estate in 2002, which was my house. I was having a baby, but I didn't look at like our parents do, which is like their forever house. You know, they don't think about moving all the time. So I was studying neighborhoods. I was looking at a value-add opportunity. You know, and that value opportunity was converting the garage into an office, which I rented to my business at the time. And so I knew I was going to get $700 a month there to help pay the mortgage. And we opened up the kitchen, and I didn't know at the time that I'd go on to much, much bigger things, but it kind of gave me a sense of working with contractors and studying housing and markets and path of progress. But not until many years later, I sold a business at the end of 2016 and got into real estate full time. At that point, I had some money to play with. And so I started investing in other people's deals and really went to a ton of conferences and was just learning as much as I can. And then eventually started doing my own deals. Our first deal was a 42 unit, $1.65 million. So tiny deal. I should have bought the whole block at the time, you know, at that price. But, you know, I started partnering with others. And so it gave me confidence to do more deals and bigger deals because, you know, in the beginning, I thought I had to like build a resume with like a 4 unit or a 6 unit or an 8 unit, you know, and that's a very long way to go. And there, it's much, much easier to buy a bigger property, adding another 0. It's the same amount of work. Yeah. You have better staff. So it really, I was fortunate to find some good people to partner with to go bigger and really rocket fuel my investing growth.
Do you think that you would have been able to go bigger faster, or was that a necessary stepping stone and timeline for getting to where you're at today?
That was a big mind shift for me because as an entrepreneur, you don't want to have like partners. You think you do it on your own. And so I was coming from that, and not until I joined a mastermind group and they kind of influenced me on that piece. And so that was huge. And I partnered with someone. We were going to the same meetups. He was traveling. He was driving out to Phoenix and Tucson like I was to look at properties. We were looking at the same type of stuff. So we started partnering, and you know, it worked out well for a few years. But the beauty of real estate is it doesn't, just because you partner with one person for a few deals doesn't mean you have to stay that way. But it really rocket fueled our growth and developed different partnerships and kind of launched a brand. So it was really beneficial to help me go further, faster, and have someone I could bounce things off of and share responsibilities with.
When did you start going more towards the syndication model, and why?
So, really, our very first deal. I was investing in other syndications, and I knew that was the way I wanted to go, leverage other people's money. And, you know, the first deal, I raised $100,000. Then it was like a few hundred thousand. And each time I just kept building on that. And that was something I had to feel comfortable doing, and certainly investing my own money led some credence to it. But really doing my homework and doing the work gave me confidence to bring on friends and family.
Talk about that in terms of how, I know for me personally, you know, I've raised probably over $50 million for different deals now for myself. And there's a different level of pressure and responsibility the second you take on somebody else's capital. And I saw a recent article actually that was posted by a guy that talked about the dangers of private investments over the course of the last few years. And I think, you know, you probably saw a lot of this in terms of the doctor or the, you know, social media influencer that has people who trust them, that have access to capital, but they didn't necessarily have the operating experience, the industry knowledge. And now those are generally the syndications and or deals that are going a little bit sideways. So what gave you the confidence to start taking and raising other people's capital? And what do you say to the person that's thinking about doing that for their own real estate investments that they should be, you know, planning and preparing for today in order to have success tomorrow as somebody who's raising other people's funds?
So, you know, I've been running business my whole life. So I leveraged that piece, and buying a property is like running a business. So I had that going for me. I didn't have that real estate experience, but I was taking my skill set and leaned into that. And then I also, asset management, we really wanted to hone in on that. When a lot of the gurus out there teach you how to get your first deal, but they don't teach you how to manage that deal.
Yeah.
So we knew that that was a valuable piece. And so I started a podcast called the Real Estate Asset Management Podcast, and brought on a lot of guests that or topics that I wanted to learn or get better at. And so I think I interviewed like 150 people over the first couple of years, and that kind of rocket fueled my knowledge base too. And then I really became the spokesperson on asset management for a lot of other conferences, but that really helped me, you know, gain more confidence to raising other people's money and to fill in some of the gaps that maybe I wasn't sure of, and also build out my network, building those relationships. If I didn't know something, which, you know, no one knows everything, I can call someone and they will probably have the answer. And if not, put me in touch with the right person. So again, that also gave me confidence to be able to solve problems, because that's what this business is. It's constant whack-a-mole solving problems.
Yeah, I love that you keep saying business. And I think so many people think of real estate as a passive income asset, right? And at the end of the day, you know, what you see on a pro forma and a spreadsheet and your model requires a lot of active energy and effort to bring those numbers to life and actualize them. And like you said, asset management is a massively critical component of ensuring that you're generating the yields and the returns and protecting your investor capital and promising, you know, delivering on what you're promising them in terms of returns. What is it that you guys subscribe to in terms of asset management and how you guys do it at such a high level?
Yeah, I mean, it's that attention to detail and consistency. You know, I've, in my book, Best in Class, I just simplify it, because it's not like you don't need an MBA. You don't need 10 years of experience. Certainly that helps, but you don't necessarily need that. We track everything on a Google sheet, nice and easy. We see our KPIs. Every week is a different sheet for each property. So we'll see where our KPIs are. We can go back 6 months, a year, 2 years, wherever it is. We have all the data we need, our CapEx tracker, our weekly report, new leases and unit renovation. So all the information is there that we can keep building on. And so during our weekly call, we can raise rents based on each unit type. You know, we're not going to do it as a whole. And maybe some units we increase the rent, some units we bring it down based on how much availability we have. So it's just going through the details and having that consistent call with our property manager and our regional manager. We secret shop the property on a monthly basis. We do visits unannounced, not to catch them doing something bad, but catch them doing something good, and let them know where our bar stands right from the beginning so they know to shoot for it. Because quite honestly, most operators aren't very active. And so the operators only perform to the level that they're expected to, which is mediocre at best.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that a lot of people kind of place their trust in somebody else to, you know, manage their assets and hopefully produce the returns. And what I'm hearing is you guys are actively engaged, whether you're self-managing or working in concert with a management company.
Absolutely. You know, the difference between 90% occupied and 95% is huge, and it doesn't cost you a penny more. But that could mean, you know, a couple million dollars on a sale just by your team having ownership thinking. And so doing the visits on a consistent basis too, the team knows that we're actively involved. There's I wouldn't say necessarily a friendship, but we're like, hey, like, how's everything going? Like, we know their likes and dislikes. So they're more likely to do a lot more for us versus an owner that really isn't engaged at all, because they want to please us, they want to do well, and they know they'll be rewarded. So they're going to work a lot harder, and the property is going to be cleaner. The potential resident is more likely to connect with them. So there's all these little things that create a huge value add for our properties.
Why multifamily?
I love the economies of scale. You know, we typically will buy 150 units or more, but you know, we've got a history. So we're buying a value add property. So let's say it's 1990s. I've got the 12 months of expenses and revenue, and we can go back, you know, another year as well. We've got the rent roll, so we've got data that will paint a picture of where they are. And then based on our experience, we could paint a picture of where we can take it to. So it's a very predictable business for the most part. And we have an on-site team. So I don't need a huge staff. I use a third-party property management company. I can have a very small staff. And we have a regional manager. And we can buy things on scale. We can operate on scale. And so you can really grow a business well. You can have really good staff. Now, if you're doing very small properties, you just don't have that, the quality of staff and the economies of scale. So multifamily really lends itself to having bigger properties, good staff. And it's the same amount of work if it's, you know, 8 units, 80 units, 180 units, quite honestly.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Now, where are you finding these opportunities? For those that are going, I want to find more deal flow. And obviously, we know a lot of it is based on kind of the seasonality and what part of the economic cycle we're in. But where are you guys finding these opportunities, and how are you continuing to put your best foot forward on finding the needles in the haystack in a challenging time in the market?
Yeah, so 100 units or more, it's all brokers. You can do yellow letters or direct, but you're really not going to find any deals that way, because the brokers are constantly hitting up these owners on a consistent basis. And we wouldn't want to go around a broker because we have really good broker relationships. We stick in a couple markets. We've been in those markets for a few years, so we have expertise. We see these brokers on a consistent basis, again, because we're not going all over the country. And so they bring me deals, whether it's on the market, off market. If it's off market, so maybe I'm on the top 20 list or top 30 list, you know.
Yep.
They know I can close. They respect me. So, you know, they'll bring me deals, and usually they don't work, you know, and sometimes they do. So A lot of times it's seeing value where other people don't, and having the broker know that I can trust me that I can get the deal done, which is very, very important.
100%. I know a lot of people that are making that transition from single family to commercial, you know, they've got all these fancy marketing strategies and text campaigns and mailing campaigns. And while some of that can work, I will say, like you said, commercial is dominantly reliant on relationships, right? And finding those deals through people that you said, know, like, and trust you. They know you can close. They want to build a relationship with you. They think there's continuity behind not just one deal, but maybe a couple more, right? And so the relationships being extremely critical. You talked about seeing opportunity when others don't. That's a big challenge for a lot of people when they're, you know, starting to look at deals and going, I don't know what I don't know. I don't know if there's, you know, a real value add engineering opportunity here. How have you been able to, through repetition and time, really start to get a keen eye for where the opportunities are at that other people might be able to spotlight and lean in on in deals that they're looking at?
Let's take a quick break and hear from today's show sponsor.
Our sponsor today is Uplift Desks, creators of the best office furniture designed to help you work better and live healthier. Visit UpliftDesk.com/Mindcast for 5% off your order. And if you sit all day while you work and you've never tried a desk that can transition between sitting and standing, this is a complete game changer for you. My standing desk is by Uplift Desk. It's what I use every day to record the show, to do my office work. And I gotta say, the transition from sitting all day to standing while I work at various times throughout the day has really made a noticeable difference. When I'm standing, I notice that my energy is up. I'm way more focused and productive. I'm an alert, and I even have a little standing treadmill under my desk now, which allows me to get some extra steps in while plugging away on calls and work. It keeps the blood flowing throughout the day, which we all know can reduce all types of inflammation, different health risks, repetitive strain. And I noticed that my posture has drastically improved since switching to Uplift Desk as well, because I'm not hunched over a computer all day. And while there's a lot of options out there, the reason I chose Uplift Desk is because of the quality. It doesn't wobble, it's completely stable, it's built to last. And you can tell based on the materials that they use, and they are customizable too. Uplift Desk lets you build your custom dream desk by choosing from over 100 desktop choices and hundreds of accessories, so you can build the perfect workspace for yourself using their fun-to-use desk configurator. Now, once you have your desk designed and ordered, they ship the same day. You get free shipping. They do free returns with free return shipping. And the best part is they have an industry-leading 15-year warranty that covers the complete desk, which to me was a big deal. And it shows that they stand behind their product. Now, to get yours, go to UpliftDesk.com/Mindcast for 5% off your order. That's UpliftDesk.com/Mindcast to get 5% off your entire order.
I think it's really knowing the numbers. We were celebrating a deal with a broker, and he mentioned this student housing thing. He kind of threw it out there. He didn't think we'd be interested, but he gave me the numbers, and we literally went back to the hotel that night and underwrote it and met with, walked the property the next day and put an offer in the day after that, because this was during COVID. It was 52% occupied, and we wanted to change it to multifamily. And so we bought it in February, 3 years ago. And by the summer of that year, we were over 90% occupied. So tremendous amount of value just by him throwing out some numbers. And we thought, wow, there's a lot of opportunity here. On our last deal that we bought, we looked at the water bill and we're like, this doesn't make sense. It's so high. And we looked at our other properties that were about the same units, and we saw that it was over 2x the amount. And it's funny, we sent it to a plumber. He looked at the picture and saw that it was like, I think it was 2.5 or 3.5 gallons per flush. He could look at the picture and know exactly what it was. We were just hoping that it was for all the units, and it was. So about 3 weeks into owning the property, we brought on a team that did all the toilets, put on faucets and shower heads. So the new toilets do 0.8 gallons per flush. And the shower heads and faucets reduce the water flow. So we're able to save at least $138,000 per year. And when you divide it by the cap rate, that creates almost $3 million of value from day one. So huge value add.
That kind of stuff, right, is the beauty of commercial real estate, where most people don't understand. I mean, you, when you say value add, you know, that had some physical components to optimizing the property, but there are other ways, right? Like just tweaking leases and just making a couple changes to paper that, like you said, can drastically, I mean, that $138,000 in savings drops right to the NOI. You divide that by the cap rate and you're adding a couple million dollars in value just by swapping out some toilets and some shower heads. That is the beauty and power of commercial real estate. And I love that. And you don't necessarily know about those things until you get into more deals and you hear more stories like this. When people are underwriting deals at a basic 101 level, what are the things that they should be looking at and pulling out of the broker marketing packages and things like that to maybe do a little bit of a, you know, closer look at and dissection on to determine if there might be some opportunity here in, you know, the capacity that we're talking about?
Yeah. And I think the two biggest things they need to check on, and depending upon what state you're in, obviously in Texas, you really need to own on this, is the insurance piece and the real estate taxes, because that's a huge variation.
Yep.
So you really got to know it and really dive deeper into the numbers that the broker gives you, because there are little things that are hidden, and you know off of history that, well, they're forgetting some things. It's off the P&L, or, you know, different things that you need to check. But obviously, pet rent, you know, rubs, are they getting reimbursed for the water, sewer, trash? If it's a master meter property, are they getting all the, you know, the electric? Knowing the comps and realistic comps, not like CoStar comps where it could be 2 miles away, 3 miles away. What's the property next door? Walking those comps is so important to see where you can actually bring the rents to. Unrenovated and renovated units, how long it takes. I think people think, oh, well, we can get it done in six months. And it really, realistically, it's going to take you probably 2 years, maybe three. I mean, we never even get to all the units, quite honestly. And what other, you know, income and expenses. On the expenses side, it's really hard to find too much savings. On the last property we did, we did find that they had an extra person on site. You just didn't, based on the numbers, you didn't need that extra person. So that was a $50,000 savings. They also had an insurance claim that got wiped off, so we didn't have to pay as much insurance that they were paying. And this property also had patios, but no privacy wall. So we were adding a privacy wall. It's going to cost us just under $1,000 per unit, but we're going to be able to charge $50 per month for the privacy wall when that new lease comes up. So we're gonna recover $600 in that first year. Assuming that if that rent turns over right from the beginning, but you know, that's a huge return on your investment. So there's just little things that you can look at. And then some of the things that you won't see on a P&L is the look of the property when you drive by it. You know, is there good signage? Is there a good paint job? Is there good landscaping? And that will really boost the value of your property, because people will be willing to pay more for that and stay longer. You know, that's renewals and less turnover, because that property looks nice from the outside. So they feel proud of where they live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Little things like that go such a long way when it comes to, you know, retention of your tenants, right? Are you a buy and hold guy? Are you a buy and exit guy? Are you a buy and exchange up guy? Are you all of the above? What is your investment subscription and why?
Yeah, so we've been a buy and exit. So on the deals that we've sold within 2 years. Partly is we took advantage of the marketplace. You know, prices were skyrocketing and we locked in huge gains for our investors, and we executed our business plan right away. We weren't dilly-dallying. You know, that's that attention to detail and staying on top of our property management company. But if you hold for a long term time, then your IRR goes down over time because yep. you've already extracted the value. So we're looking to sell, and we had some more partners on some of our earlier deals, so it didn't make sense to 1031. But some of our deals going forward, we would look to 1031 for the investors that want to stay with us, and almost all just reinvest that money anyway. So that would be a no brainer. But yeah, we want to come in, execute, and if the market cooperates, then we look to sell. If not, then we hold until the right time.
Yeah, makes sense. I know, obviously, when you're taking other investors' capital and they're looking to get those capital, you know, that capital returned to them based on whatever the model is that you guys kind of put for that particular investment, kind of requires you, right, to exit and, you know, return that capital and rinse and repeat it. I know some people will like to just sit and hold, you know, forever. Are you only doing deals inside your fund, or are you also doing deals that are more, you know, individual to Gary and your, you know, kind of investment and wealth plan long term?
So we've syndicated all of our deals. We started a fund on our last deal. And so we offered actually our investors two ways. They can invest in the fund, or we had a special purpose vehicle, because a lot of investors want to know the exact deal they're investing in and they think they could pick the winners. So be it. And that's the way I invest. I invest all my money in my deals. That's a way for me to kind of manage my own wealth, you know? So yep. I know each deal, you know, through and through. So I feel very confident in that. And so I'm not very diversified, but I feel that I'm getting the best return for my money.
What is your outlook in the short term for the economy and how that ties into your investment model and how you guys are going to navigate that?
Yeah, it's interesting times. It's like good data is bad news and bad
yeah,
news
right.
is good news. Like it's so confusing, and there's lagging indicators like inflation. But I am optimistic over the next few years, and that interest rates will come down probably starting in June, because they can't start bringing rates down too close to the election. And so June seems like a good time. And I think that's, if you look on some of the prognosticators, that's what they're guessing. And so that's going to drive all the money that's been sitting on the sidelines waiting to jump in. It's going to drive transactions, because transactions have been minimized. And so I think the next few years look really positive. And then at some point, which we've been saying for many, many years, is this like kind of massive pullback, you know, recession, because we really, maybe we call it a mild recession, but we haven't really been hit by a big one. And eventually it's going to happen. So you just have to be careful, but you're putting in the right debt, finding the right properties, and operating the heck out of it, and I think you'll be in really good shape.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of just answered the question, but I was going to say, you know, how do you prepare yourself for something like that? And maybe there's something you would add to that, you know, from what you just said, and or do you just not plan for those kind of things and you just execute on your strategy and model based on what fits and falls into that criteria?
We're always underwriting deals, even deals we're probably not going to go after, because it gives us data points. And so we know where the market is, whether we want to sell, whether we want to buy. I keep investing in growing my team, even though we've only did one deal last year. I'm still covering the overhead. We've added more people because we want to get better at what we do, and we want to make sure We're protecting investors' money now and in the future. So we're constantly evolving, adding new ways to kind of run through different scenarios for our own properties, and getting better and better at what we do. And so when opportunity arises, we're ready. We have the team in place, and we can seize upon that.
Talk about the timeline that has led to where I am talking to you at this point in time, because so many people I know are excited about real estate and the vehicle that it is and what it can do for, you know, someone's life, their financials, their dreams. But talk about how hard that journey has been for you and what the timeline around that journey has been for you. Because it's always easy to look at somebody's highlight reel and kind of the success story we see today. But I want to know about all the sleepless nights and the doubts that you had and the times you second guessed whether you should continue on this path and ultimately how long it took you to get to where you're at right now.
Are you interested in boosting your income by an extra $50,000 this year? If so, you're going to love what I've got in store for you. I am beyond excited to officially announce an incredible opportunity to join me in my exclusive mastermind, which will include myself and 25 other hand-selected investors who are actively pursuing commercial real estate in 2024 and want to be held accountable to making sure they buy their first or their next commercial real estate investment property that will net them a minimum of $50,000 a year. This mastermind group will not only teach you how to do that, how to find, how to analyze, how to structure and buy these types of commercial real estate investment properties, but you'll also have an opportunity to be a part of an intimate group of high achievers that are going to take your network and your resources to a whole nother level. But here's the catch. Like I mentioned before, this is exclusive. We're only selecting 25 ambitious individuals for our founding members group who are serious and ready to take that next step in their commercial real estate investing journey. So if you are ready to increase your passive income by at least $50,000 in the next year with commercial real estate investing, then this is your moment. These spaces are gonna fill up fast. And trust me, this is the one and only time to be a founding member, which comes with some pretty special benefits. So head over to myfirst50k.com and submit your application now. Again, that's myfirst50k.com. You can head over there, check out the program, see everything that it entails, submit your application to join, and I can't wait to connect with you soon.
Yeah, so I had a really good foundation because of my years as an entrepreneur, and there were plenty of punches I took along the way, operating a business during 2008, 2009, when you have millions of dollars in receivables and you're not sure you're going to get paid. You have, at the time I had a few hundred people of staff, and your lender saying, we're calling your loan, you know, it's due. And you've got to, you know, work through that. And, you know, we didn't pay off the loan because we didn't have the money. But eventually we found a lender, but that took like a year, quite honestly. We eventually got paid and worked our way through it and kept growing the business. But yeah, with real estate, obviously, you know, sometimes you've got hard money down and you're trying to raise capital and it's not going as easily as you want it to go, and you're worried like, hey, am I gonna lose this property because I haven't gotten there. And so it's finding solutions. On the last deal, I borrowed some money. Luckily, I had some friends that really believed in me and it helped me. And as soon as January turned, we had four investors that invested like $500,000 in the same week. So sentiment changed, and you've got to fight through these issues, whether you have you know, a fire on the property or this or that. It's just whack-a-mole and working through those issues and having that experience really helps. But yeah, there's, I think if you don't have a deal that's in struggling right now, then you don't have enough deals out there. You know, everyone's got a deal or two at least. And yeah, certainly we have that. And, you know, coming out of pocket to help cover that property, I feel we're on the financial side of things, on the P&L, we're kicking butt. We're way ahead of pro forma. It's the interest rate that's really hurting us. And so it's just, you know, working our way through the point where interest rates come down and we could sell the property at a decent return for our investors. But yeah, there's people look at the number inside your team, they see a number of what you could possibly make, but it's possibly made. You know, some deals I might break even, some deals I might do great at, and some deals I might have to put in my own money and won't see that money until we sell. If we're lucky, then I'll make that money. So on paper it looks great, but the reality is, yeah, it's not until you get there, and it's a rough road to get there.
Looking back on your journey, is there anything you would do differently?
I guess partner with someone earlier and find that mastermind earlier, because leveraging other people's experiences is so important, and being around like-minded people really gave me that energy that got me all in. Once I got all in, then like things start snowballing really quickly. And then I focused more on the raising capital earlier too. I really didn't hire someone full time to help with that until the end of 2022. And I should have invested in that role much earlier. I just focused on operations. And now I have two people that focus on capital raising for me. And that's really helped. But you know, hire, you've got to expand. And in the beginning, you do everything yourself, and you can't do everything yourself. So make sure you invest in your team, and that'll free you up to focus on higher level things, bigger stuff, and focus on your business, not as much in your business.
You mentioned raising capital, and obviously as a real estate investor, especially if you want to do bigger deals, then you know you can swing at the plate yourself. You got to get a bigger bat, and raising capital is a big part of that. When the market is good, raising capital was very easy. When the capital markets are very tight and the economy is the way it is, right, it's a lot more challenging. What have been some of the practices and frameworks or strategies that have worked well for you over the course of your investing journey that has helped you connect with other investors to build that trust, to get them interested and actually invested in your deals?
Yeah, so when I started, I hosted a meetup in Los Angeles, and I also did one in Phoenix. That helped. Having a podcast, writing a best-selling book, speaking at other conferences. So all these things help. Not one thing, what I would say, is a major piece, but doing lots of different things helps build trust and develop relationships, because you can go to a conference and talk to 25 people that have been following you or watching your journey, and you never knew that.
Yeah.
But you strike up a conversation, and then now they're more likely to invest with you in the future. Or, you know, they passed on the first deal, the second deal. You know, some people come in on the third deal, the fifth deal, the seventh deal. They're watching you. It's amazing. You don't realize it until you run into them, and they know, like, oh, you went to Greece last month, and you're like, they're like, I saw it on social media. Like, people are watching and
yeah,
making sure you're doing the right things, and then eventually they'll come on board. So having that presence across multiple platforms, I think, is really, really important.
Man, I would double down and echo on that sentiment myself. I mean, the podcast, and really, like what you're saying, right, is content and different mediums ultimately give you an opportunity to create a bridge that somebody else can walk across and engage with you in, which ultimately is going to lead to a relationship. And if you're not putting yourself out there, if you're not, whether it's, you know, going to meetups, it's having a podcast, it's making posts on social media, sharing what you're doing or your opinions on things, you got to put yourself out there if you want to build relationships to raise capital. Because at the end of the day, while most people are going to look at the numbers and the deal and the market, make sure that, you know, feels good and comfortable for them, it's probably not going to be what checks the final box. And that's going to be the operator, the person that they really trust is going to be able to bring that, you know, to life, like you said, right?
Yeah. And that's something I really had to overcome, because I hated talking about myself and what I was doing. And so I've gotten a lot better. Certainly, I wasn't good at it in the beginning, but that was a big kind of.
I was going to ask you, how did you overcome that? What was it for you?
Baby steps. You know, I did a podcast, the first podcast, and I sucked. You know, and I sucked less the second time, and sucked less the third time, and just kind of mirror other people, like who do I think are really good in this space, as far as studying people at conferences, on podcasts, looking at other content, and just getting comfortable. Like, I had done Facebook Lives and other things, and I hated doing that, you know, but at the end of the day, like no one cares and no one sees your uncomfortableness. And so it's just, yeah, over repetition, just keep doing it, you know? So,
yeah, absolutely. It's funny. You the more content you put out, there's really two things that I learned is most of the people that are talking shit and hating on you are the people that are doing so much far less and or you really don't care about their opinion anyways, but we seem to give power to people that we don't care about. And then the other thing was, is nobody cares as much as you think they do, right? Like most of the time people are like, you're not that special, man. So like, stop making yourself feel like you're so special that it's preventing you from adding value and going after what it is that you want to get after. Now, as we wrap up, I'm curious to know on your macro picture and some of the big things that you're working towards and what it is that you're doing specifically kind of, hey, here's the clouds and the vision, but here's what we're executing in the dirt and working towards. What does that look like for Break a Day Capital?
Yeah, I mean, it's on multiple levels. Obviously, we want to increase the amount of content and quality of content. A lot of our properties, we finished our main, you know, business plan. And so how do we hone in? And so putting together goals for each property on a monthly basis, on a quarterly basis, just like you would with an employee. And so really honing in on that and just constantly pushing the team on thinking outside the box. How can rewarding new ideas at the property level, at our, let's say, corporate level, and just always have, you know, Kaizen is a core value. So constant improvement and how can we do something different and better than the next guy, you know?
So I know a lot of people are going to resonate with obviously your expertise, your track record, maybe want to know or follow more of the deals and the stuff that you're sharing out on social media and the content that you guys are creating. What's the best place for them to do that, Gary?
Yeah, go to our website, breakofdaycapital.com. You can sign up for our newsletter. You can see the deals. We have investor resources. You can buy the best-in-class book. You can schedule a call. So everything, go to our website. And then certainly we're on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, so all of that.
We'll be sure to link all of that up on Gary's episode at millionairemindcast.com. Gary, thanks for coming on the show today.
I appreciate it. Fun talk.
Well, that wraps up this week's episode. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that interview. And if you did, all I ask is that you take 2 minutes and leave a review in iTunes, where by doing so, you're also going to get entered in to win a $100 gift card. Don't forget to share this episode out with somebody else that may need to hear it or may get some value from what was talked about in today's interview. And for those of you who are really looking to accelerate your wealth building journey, you want to unlock more financial freedom, you want to get more time back, or maybe you just want to level up your life, your business, your finances, be sure to head over to millionairemindcast.com and check out all the amazing products and resources that we have for our Millionaire Mindcast family, whether that's one-on-one coaching with me, mastermind events, downloads and checklists, the Rich Life Planner for those of you looking to take your goal setting and productivity to the next level. We've got all kinds of great, valuable tools. So be sure to check those out at millionairemindcast.com. And last but not least, if you're not on my weekly text letter and you want to be the first to know of exclusive updates and offers, in addition to behind the scenes access to a lot of the stuff that I'm doing, that I'm investing in, be sure to join by texting the word notes to 844-447-1555. With that being said, thanks for listening today. Until next time, keep investing in yourself and your wealth on your march to a million and beyond. Cheers, my friends.